Good evening, Night Owls. I'm Russ Chamberlain, and you're listening to Midnight Signals, the show where we explore the darkest corners of our collective past. Tonight, our signal takes us to the early 1800s, to a modest family farm in Adams, Tennessee, where the Bell family encountered what many call the most famous haunting in American history. Make yourself comfortable, hush your surroundings, and let's delve into this unsettling tale. Our story begins in 1804, when John Bell and his wife Lucy made their way from North Carolina to settle along the Red River in northern Tennessee. In those days, the land was wide and fertile, mostly unspoiled with gently rolling hills and dense woodland. For the Bells, John, Lucy, and their children, the move promised prosperity. They arrived eager to farm the rich soil, raise livestock, and find a peaceful home. At first, life mirrored that hope. By day, John and his sons worked tirelessly in the fields, planting corn and tending to animals, while Lucy and her daughters managed the household. Evenings were spent quietly, with scripture readings by the light of a flickering candle. Neighbors in the growing settlement of Adams spoke well of John's dedication and Lucy's gentle spirit. The Bells were welcomed into the fold, a new family building their future on the Tennessee earth. In those early years, the Bells likely gave little thought to uneasy rumors whispered around the region. Strange lights seen deep in the woods, soft cries heard by travelers at dusk, small mysteries that most dismissed as product of the imagination. Life on the frontier demanded practicality above all else, leaving little time to dwell on spirits or curses. Unbeknownst to them, events on their farm would soon dominate not only their lives, but local lore for generations to come. It was late summer 1817 when John Bell's ordinary routines took a dramatic turn. One evening, in the waning twilight, he spotted an odd creature near the edge of a tree line, a strange beast resembling part dog, part rabbit. Startled, John raised his rifle and fired, the shot echoing through the fields. Yet, when he went to inspect the spot, nothing remained. No tracks, no blood, nothing to prove the creature existed at all. John brushed it off as a trick of falling light or his own tired eyes. He returned to the house, hoping for a quiet evening. But in the days that followed, faint knocking sounds began at the windows after sunset. Soft scratching rustled against the walls as if curious fingers or claws tested the timbers. The family's dog barked at shadows, growling at the emptiness of the yard. No one considered it a haunting at first. Life on a rural farm was filled with pests, nocturnal animals, and the countless unexplained noises of the frontier. Yet the disturbances persisted, night after night, growing a little bolder each time. One evening, the knocking on the walls turned so loud it woke the entire household. Lamps were lit, doors were open, the ground searched, but the land lay silent under the moon. Within weeks, the unsettling taps and scrapes evolved into something more alarming, disembodied voices. At first, the voices were faint, a soft murmur in rooms with no one in them. Betsy Bell, the youngest daughter, insisted she heard her name called near her bed. She ran to her mother and her father trembling, but they found no intruder. Still, the voice continued, too low for them to identify words, yet distinct enough to chill the blood. Lucy Bell began to fear they were facing a spirit, an unclean presence that had invaded their home. She prayed for divine protection each evening, yet sometimes the voice seemed to mimic her prayers, twisting her words into a derisive echo. John Bell, once confident and strong, grew unnerved. When he tried reading from the Bible, the voice mocked him, imitating his tone like a cruel prankster. As the nights passed, disturbances gained momentum. Doors opened by themselves, chairs shifted with no hand to move them, and curtains fluttered in a room void of drafts. Even in daytime, Betsy would find objects missing, only for them to reappear on the kitchen floor or a distant shelf. It felt as if an unseen intelligence roamed the house, bent on sowing chaos. Of all the Bells, Betsy suffered the most. She was awakened at night by her hair being yanked hard enough to pull her from sleep. Invisible hands slapped her cheeks, leaving red prints. When she walked outside by day, she heard harsh whispers at her ear, telling her she would know no peace. Exhausted, She became withdrawn, her once bright spirit dulled by a ceaseless fear. Rumor spread that Betsy's torment was the worst evidence of the haunting. Neighbors who dared spend the night in the Bell household often witnessed her blankets ripped from the bed or watched her clutch her bruised arms in distress. As these accounts circulated through the community, people began referring to the presence as the Bell Witch, though no one was certain if it truly was a witch's spirit or something else altogether. In the tightly knit town of Adams, word of the strange happenings at the Bell Farm soon reached every ear. Some neighbors offered sympathy, believing wholeheartedly that the family was besieged by an evil force. Others expressed skepticism, guessing there must be a logical trick behind it all. John Bell, ordinarily a private man, found himself hosting visitors eager to witness the so-called witch in action. These visitors gathered by the parlor fireplace or stood in darkened hallways, waiting in tense silence. Occasionally, the presence did not appear, and the disappointed guests left unconvinced. More often, they heard knocks vibrating through the walls or faint moans drifting between rooms. One man, reading aloud from the Bible, found his words drowned out by a rasping voice that repeated the verses back at him in a warped, sing-song tone. Each new account that left the Bell Farm seemed to confirm the unearthly intelligence behind the torment. It was no longer mere noises or poltergeist pranks. This was something with a will and a voice, something that could think and speak on its own. Months of sleepless nights wore down the Bell family. John's demeanor changed. The weight of the haunting pressed on him. Lucy, steadfast in her devotion, prayed constantly for deliverance. The older Bell children, seeing Betsy attacked so frequently, tried to shield her but were powerless against an enemy that slipped through walls. Farming tasks were delayed or neglected as the family's time and energy funneled into coping with an unseen assailant. John Bell began experiencing health problems that no local healer could explain. Trembling hands, difficulty swallowing, and fits of dizziness. Whether these ailments arose from stress or something darker, they only reinforced his sense of dread. The voice took to mocking him personally, calling him by name and snickering at his deteriorating condition. At times, he woke to find himself pinned in bed, unable to move or call out. Despite it all, Lucy held the family together. Soft-spoken and gentle, she soothed Betsy's tears and administered whatever remedies she could to John. Yet the unrelenting barrage of knocks, whispers, and violence within her own home tested her faith daily. Amid the chaos, Betsy clung to one source of joy, her engagement to Joshua Gardner, a kind young man from the area. They hoped to marry and begin their own life, perhaps on a parcel of the Bell land or a new farmstead nearby. But whenever Joshua visited the Bell home, the unseen spirit raged. Stones rattled against the walls, and the doors slammed as if in warning. During quiet walks by the river, Betsy heard the voice hiss in her ear, threatening dire outcomes if she ever were to wed Joshua. Night after night, Betsy lay awake, her tears soaked onto her pillow as she wrestled with the choice between her beloved fiancé and this formidable, invisible foe. She confided in Lucy, who offered comfort but had no solution. For a while, Betsy and Joshua resolved to stand firm, but the spirit's fury only escalated. Believing she had no alternative, Betsy broke off the engagement. Some thought the family's torment would subside if the witch's demands were met. In a cruel sense, it seemed to succeed. With Betsy's engagement ended, the spirit appeared slightly less focused on her. By now, the Bell Witch was no longer a mere local curiosity. Word of the haunting spread across the region and reached the ears of Andrew Jackson, then a prominent figure who would later become president. Intrigued, or perhaps skeptical, he traveled to Adams with a party of men to witness the phenomenon firsthand. According to popular account, the men found their wagon inexplicably stuck on the road near the Bell property, refusing to move until a disembodied voice commanded them to proceed. That night, Jackson's men sat in the Bell parlor, determined to uncover fraud if it existed. Instead, they found themselves subjected to jeering laughter and unexpected slaps. One boasted of carrying a special bullet that could kill any spirit, only to be chased from the house in terror. By morning, Jackson reputedly left, shaken. Although details vary among storytellers, the essence of his experience only fueled the legend's fire. Some in Adams took to calling the presence Kate, suspecting it might be the spirit of a neighbor named Kate Batts. Rumors pointed to an old feud or land dispute between Kate Batts and John Bell. Whether any of that was true, or Kate Batts was simply an unfortunate scapegoat, remains unclear. The entity itself, at times, answered to Kate when addressed, while at other times denying any such name. It was a puzzle of contradictions, claiming multiple identities: a wayward spirit, a demon, or a lost soul wandering in malice. No single explanation satisfied everyone in the community. With Betsy's engagement to Joshua broken, the witch devoted increasing attention to John Bell. His health declined rapidly in 1820, marked by spells of near paralysis and unremitting pain. Lucy tended to him day and night. Their children, worried and exhausted, watched as their patriarch grew weaker, his once strong presence withering under an unseen hand. In December of that year, John Bell was found unconscious in his bed. A small vial of dark liquid stood nearby. No one recognized its contents. One of his sons put a single drop on the tongue of the family cat, which died instantly. Almost immediately, the voice shrieked in triumph, boasting that it had given John a final, fatal dose. That same day, John Bell passed away without regaining consciousness, leaving his family both grief-stricken and horrified by the witch's brazen gloating. The funeral drew a large gathering. Many came to mourn the respected farmer. Others arrived to see whether the witch would appear in some dreadful form. As pallbearers lowered John Bell's coffin, a jeering laughter rippled across the mourners, prompting many to look wildly around for the source. Then, as told in countless retellings, the voice broke into a rude, mocking song, echoing among the gravestones and sending shudders through the crowd. In the wake of John Bell's death, life on the farm settled into an uneasy quiet. Betsy noticed fewer nighttime assaults, and the daily havoc lessened. People whispered that the witch finally achieved its purpose by taking John Bell's life. Then, just as suddenly as it had arrived, the witch declared it would leave the family, though it promised to return in 7 years. After a brief period of stillness, the witch's threat rang true. Around 1828, a few of the Bells claimed to hear light tapping or distant murmurs echoing in empty rooms. However, these new incidents were mild and short-lived compared to the previous years of torment. Soon enough, even these faded, leaving the Bells with haunted memories but relative peace. Near the Bell property stood a modest cave by the Red River, a spot often tied to the legend. Over time, people theorized that the witch might linger in the cave's dark recesses, though the Bells themselves rarely ventured inside. Later visitors and locals would tell of odd voices whispering in the cave or strange lights gliding across the damp stone. Most likely, these stories were born of the haunting's lingering aura. Yet, they continued to fuel the notion that the witch could still roam beyond the farm, hidden beneath the earth. Long after the Bells had ceased to hear the witch's voice, the story lived on. Word traveled to neighboring towns, then farther, into newspapers and traveler anecdotes. The tale of the Tennessee family plagued by a fiendish, talkative spirit captured the imagination. Some insisted the Bell Witch was a cautionary omen of what happens when old feuds and injustices are left unresolved. Others believed it was a rare glimpse of a diabolical power unleashed for reasons still unknown. Here in Adams, people repeated the story around hearths and campfires. Children were warned not to wander too far near the old Bell farm after dark. When neighbors passed by at night, they might hear a faint rustle in the bush or catch a flicker of light among the trees, prompting them to walk faster, hearts pounding, minds remembering how once a family had suffered greatly at the hands of an unseen force. Naturally, not everyone agreed on what transpired at the Bell Farm. Some maintained it was all too real, a case of a vengeful spirit or malignant presence carrying out a personal vendetta. Others whispered that perhaps a member of the Bell family had orchestrated the phenomena with cunning trickery, though that failed to explain the bruises on Betsy, the widespread witnesses, or John's mysterious death. Still, Others pointed to the possibility of an unsettled spirit who had attached itself to the land for reasons lost to time. What none could deny was the tangible suffering inflicted on the Bells. John Bell's slow decline and Betsy's bruises were impossible to ignore. Multiple guests, neighbors, acquaintances, even travelers testified to hearing the same eerie voice that threatened, teased, and recited scripture. In an age when the supernatural was both feared and accepted, the Bell Witch story captured hearts and sparked endless speculation. After John Bell's death, the family held onto the farm for several years. Betsy, robbed of her engagement to Joshua, eventually found a calmer path through life, though the memory of her tormented youth never fully left her. Lucy, steadfast and devout to the end, kept her household as best as she could, unwilling to surrender her faith even after all she had witnessed. Over time, the children married and started families of their own, quietly distancing themselves from the tragedy that had defined their upbringing. Generations passed, the farm changed hands, the Bell House was repurposed and renovated, and Adams itself transformed slowly from a frontier settlement into a more established community. Yet the name Bell Witch continued to slip into conversation whenever strange knocks were heard late at night or lonely travelers glimpsed inexplicable lights in the distance. The story refused to fade, woven into the identity of the land itself. Even as the first-hand witnesses to the haunting aged and died, their accounts survived in letters, diaries, and recollections passed down among locals. Visitors to Adams would hear about the famed Bell Witch, about the dreadful death of John Bell, the heartbreak of Betsy's broken engagement, and the brazen voice that filled nights with fear. Some folks approached the story with reverence, others with skepticism, but no one denied that it shaped the character of the town. In the hush of a moonlit evening, one might stand on that old farmland, fields once tilled by John Bell's callous hands, now peaceful beneath the Tennessee sky, and imagine the entire family huddled in the house, listening with terrified hearts for the next knock on the wall. It's said that if you pause long enough, you might sense a faint echo of their dread, carried on a stray breath of wind. The Bell Witch remains a singular chapter in American folklore, a tale of a family besieged by something unseen, lethal, and uncannily aware. However one interprets the events, whether as vengeful ghosts, demonic presence, or some other unexplainable force, its resonance lies in the very human drama at its core. Here was a father undone by circumstances he could not control, a daughter tormented in her own home, and a close-knit household tested by relentless fear. In the end, the Bell Witch story offers a lesson in how thin the line between our daily certainties and the mysteries that defy them. When night falls and the wind rattles the shutters in a silent house, we remember John Bell and his family, who discovered that the safe haven of home can become a battlefield against forces beyond mortal comprehension. I'm Russ Chamberlain, and you've been listening to Midnight Signals. May this account of the Bell Witch linger with you as a reminder that in the deepest stillness of the night, anything seems possible. Even the unseen tapping of a force that seeks to make itself known. Sleep well, if you dare.